Chapter 4. The Interview. After her return to the prison, Hester Prynne was found to be in a state of nervous excitement that demanded constant watchfulness, lest she should perpetrate violence on herself, or do some half-frenzied mischief to the poor babe. As night approached, it proving impossible to quell her insubordination by rebuke or threats of punishment, Master Brackett, the jailer, thought fit to introduce a physician. He described him as a man of skill in all Christian modes of physical science, and likewise familiar with whatever the savage people could teach in respect to medicinal herbs and roots that grew in the forest. To say the truth, there was much need of professional assistance, not merely for Hester herself, but still more urgently for the child, who, drawing its sustenance from the maternal bosom, seemed to have drank in with it all the turmoil, the anguish, and despair which pervaded the mother's system. It now writhed in convulsions of pain, and was a forcible type in its little frame of the moral agony which Hester Prynne had borne throughout the day. Closely following the jailer into the dismal apartment appeared that individual of singular aspect whose presence in the crowd had been of such deep interest to the wearer of the scarlet letter, so the guy that she noticed across the crowd. He was lodged in the prison, not as suspected of any offense, but as the most convenient and suitable mode of disposing of him, until the magistrate should have conferred with the Indian Sagamores respecting his ransom. His name was announced as Roger Chillingworth. The jailer, after ushering him into the room, remained a moment, marveling at the comparative quiet that followed his entrance, for Hester Prynne had immediately become as still as death, although the child continued to moan. "Prithee, friend, leave me alone with my patient," said the practitioner. "Trust me, good jailer, you shall briefly have peace in your house, and I promise you, Mistress Prynne shall hereafter be more amiable to just authority than you may have found her heretofore."
"Nay, if your worship can accomplish that," answered Master Brackett, "I shall own you for a man of skill indeed. Verily, the woman hath been like a possessed one, and there lacks little that I should take in hand to drive Satan out of her with stripes to whip her."
The stranger had entered the room with the characteristic quietude of the profession to which he announced himself as belonging. Nor did his demeanor change when the withdrawal of the prison keeper left him face to face with a woman whose absorbed notice of him in the crowd had insinuated so close a relation between himself and her. His first care was given to the child, whose cries, indeed, as she lay writhing on the trundle bed, made it of peremptory necessity to postpone all other business to the task of soothing her. He examined the infant carefully, and then proceeded to unclasp a leathern case, which he took from beneath his dress. It appeared to contain medical preparations, one of which he mingled with a cup of water. "My own studies in alchemy," observed he, "and my sojourn for above a year past, among a people well versed in the kindly properties of simples, so that means herbs, have made a better physician of me than many that claim the medical degree. Here, woman, the child is yours. She is none of mine. Neither will she recognize my voice or aspect as a father. Administer this medicine, therefore, with your own hand." Hester repelled the offered medicine, at the same time gazing with strongly marked apprehension into his face. "Would you avenge yourself on the innocent babe?" whispered she. "Foolish woman," responded the physician, half coldly, half soothingly, "what should ail me to harm this misbegotten and miserable babe? The medicine is potent for good, and were it my child, yet mine own as well as yours, I could do no better for it." As she still hesitated, being, in fact, in no reasonable state of mind, he took the infant in his arms and himself administered the medicine. It soon proved its efficacy and redeemed the leech's blood. So leech is another word for doctor. The moans of the little patient subsided, its convulsive tossing gradually ceased, and in a few moments, as is the custom of young children after relief from pain, it sank into a profound and dewy slumber. The physician, as he had a fair right to be termed, next bestowed his attention on the mother. With calm and intent scrutiny, he felt her pulse, looked into her eyes, a gaze that made her heart shrink and shudder because so familiar and yet so cold and strange, and finally satisfied with his investigation, proceeded to mingle another medicine. "I know not Lethe nor Nepenthe," remarked he, "but I have learned many new secrets in the wilderness, and here is one of them. A recipe that an Indian taught me, in requital of some lessons of my own, that were as old as Pericles. Drink it. It may be less soothing than a sinless conscience. That I cannot give you. But it will calm the swell and heaving of your passion, like oil thrown onto the waves of a tempestuous sea." He presented the cup to Hester, who received it with a slow, earnest look into his face, not precisely a look of fear, yet full of doubt and questioning as to what his purposes might be. She also looked at her slumbering child. "I would have thought of death," she said, "have wished for it even, would have prayed for it, were it fit that I should have prayed for anything. Yet if death be in this cup, I bid you think again.
before you tell me to drink it. See, it's even at my lips now.
Drink, then, replied he, still with the same cold composure. Do you know me so little, Hester Prynne? Are my purposes wont to be so shallow? Even if I imagine a scheme of vengeance, what could I do better for my object than to let you live, than to give you the medicines against all harm and peril of life, so that this burning shame may still blaze upon your chest?
As he spoke, he laid his long forefinger on the scarlet letter, so he literally reaches out and touches her, which forthwith seemed to scorch into Hester's breast as if it had been red hot. So it's like he's just burned her with his finger.
He noticed her involuntary gesture and smiled. Live, therefore, and bear about your doom with you, in the eyes of men and women, in the eyes of him who you did call your husband, in the eyes of yonder child. And now may you live, take this medicine.
Without further exposition or delay, Hester Prynne drained the cup, and at the motion of the man of skill, seated herself on the bed where the child was sleeping, while he drew the only chair which the room afforded, and took his own seat beside her. She could not but tremble at these preparations, for she felt that, having now done that all humanity or principle, or if it so were, a refined cruelty impelled him to do for the relief of the physical suffering, he was next to treat with her as the man whom she had most deeply and irreparably injured.
Hester, said he, I ask not why nor how you have fallen into the pit, or rather say, thou hast descended to the pedestal of infamy on which I found thee. The reason is not far to seek. It was my folly, my fault, my foolishness, and my weakness. I, a man of thought, the bookworm of great libraries, a man already in decay, having given my best years to feed the hungry dream of knowledge, what had I to do with youth and beauty like your own? Misshapen from my birth hour, how could I delude myself with the idea that intellectual gifts might veil physical deformity in a younger girl's fantasy? Men call me wise. If sages were ever wise in their own behoof, I might have foreseen all this. I might have known that as I came out of the vast and dismal forest and entered the settlement of Christian men, the very first object to meet my eyes would be you, Hester Prynne, standing up, statue of ignominy, before the people. Nay, from the moment when we came down the old church steps together, a married pair, I might have beheld the balefire of that scarlet letter blazing at the end of our path.
You know, said Hester, for depressed as she was, she could not endure this last quiet stab at the token of her shame. You knew that I was frank with you. I felt nor love, nor feigned any, nor pretended to feel love.
True, he said. It was my fault. I have said it. But up to that epoch of my life, I had lived in vain. The world had been so cheerless. My heart was habitation large enough for many guests, but lonely and chill and without a household fire. I longed to kindle one. I longed to fall in love. It seemed not so wild a dream, old as I was, and somber as I was, and misshapen as I was, that the simple bliss, which is scattered far and wide for all mankind to gather up, might yet be mine. And so, Hester, I drew you into my heart, into its innermost chamber, and sought to warm you by the warmth which your presence made there.
I have greatly wronged you, murmured Hester.
We have wronged each other, he said. Mine was the first wrong, when I betrayed your budding youth into a false and unnatural relation with my decay, so he's quite old. Therefore, as a man who has not thought and philosophized in vain, I seek no vengeance, plot no evil, against you. Between you and me, the scale hangs fairly balanced, the scale of justice, so we're even. But, Hester, the man lives who has wronged us both.
Who is he?
Ask me not, replied Hester Prynne, looking firmly into his face, that you shall never know.
Never, sayest you? Rejoined he, with a smile of dark and self-relying intelligence.
Never know him? Believe me, Hester, there are few things, whether in the outward world or to a certain depth in the invisible sphere of thought, few things hidden from the man who devotes himself earnestly and unreservedly to the solution of a mystery. You may cover up your secret from the prying multitude. You may conceal it, too, from the ministers and magistrates, even as you did this day, when they sought to wrench the name out of your heart and give you a partner on your pedestal. But as for me, I come to the inquest with other senses than they possess. I shall seek this man as I have sought truth in books, as I have sought gold in alchemy. There is a sympathy that will make me conscious of him. I shall see him tremble. I shall feel myself shudder suddenly and unawares. Sooner or later, he will be mine.
The eyes of the wrinkled scholar glowed so intensely upon her that Hester Prynne clasped her hands over her heart, dreading lest he should read the secret there at once.
You will not reveal his name?
Not any less is he mine, resumed he with a look of confidence, as if destiny were at one with him. He bears no letter of infamy marred onto his garment as you do, but I shall read it on his heart. Yet fear not for him. Think not that I shall interfere with heaven's own method of retribution, or to my own loss betray him to the gripe of human law. So I will not get in the way of God's judgment, and I will not reveal him to the authorities so that he gets to get punished by society. Neither do you imagine that I shall contrive aught against his life nor against his fame, as if I judge he be a man of fair repute. So I won't kill him, and I won't smear his reputation. Let him live. Let him hide himself in outward honor as he may. Not the less shall he be mine. I will still have his... I will have my thumb on him, basically. Thy acts are like mercy, said Hester, bewildered and appalled, but your words interpret you as a terror. He's freaking her out. One thing, you that were my wife, I would enjoin upon you, continued the scholar. You have kept the secret of thy paramour. Paramour means secret lover. Keep likewise mine, so keep my secret. There are none in this land who know me. Breathe not to any human soul that you did ever call me husband. Here on this wild outskirt of the earth I shall pitch my tent, for elsewhere a wanderer and isolated from human interests, I find here a woman, a man, a child, amongst whom and myself there exist the closest ligaments. No matter whether of love or hate, no matter whether of right and wrong, you and yours, Hester Prynne, belong to me. My home is where you are, and where he is, but betray me not. Why do you desire it? Why do you want this? Inquired Hester, shrinking, as she hardly knew why, from the secret bond. This is freaking her out. This is making her very uncomfortable. Why not announce yourself openly and cast me off at once? Why not just tell everyone who you are and then give me even more shame and divorce me, basically? It may be, replied he, because I will not encounter the dishonor that besmirches the husband of a faithless woman, because I don't want my reputation ruined. It may be for other reasons. Enough it is my purpose to live and die unknown. Let, therefore, thy husband be to the world as one already dead, and of whom no tidings shall ever come. We will never hear from him again. Recognize me not, by word, by sign, by look. Breathe not the secret, above all, to the man thou wottest of, so the man that you know, but... No. Shouldest thou fail me in this, beware. His fame, his position, his life will be in my hands. Beware. I will keep your secret as I have kept his, said Hester. Swear it, rejoined he. And she took the oath. And now, Mistress Prynne, said old Roger Chillingsworth, as he was hereafter to be named, I leave you alone with your infant and the scarlet letter. How is it, Hester? Do your sentence bind thee to wear the token in your sleep? Are you not afraid of nightmares and hideous dreams? Why do you smile at me like that? Inquired Hester, troubled at the expression of his eyes. Are you like the black man, the devil, that haunts the forest round about us? Have you enticed me into a bond that will prove the ruin of your soul? Not your soul, he answered with another smile. No, not yours.